cliffcentral.com.
It's a pleasure to have someone in the studio. I was told about this man by Mike Sharman. Obviously, there isn't a person in South Africa who doesn't know about Spur. But we're not talking about Spur this morning. I want to interview the guy behind it all, because just occasionally you get to sit opposite someone like this who's really done things that's completely changed the landscape. And he seems to me like one of the most interesting people in South Africa. So you know what? When you have these people around, you try to get them in here and you try to talk to them. Alan Amber is the founder and executive chairman of Spur Steak Ranches. He also teaches yoga at Sea Point Gym, among other things. And he looks like he knows everything. You look way too wise to be sitting here wasting your time with me at 7:30 in the morning.
Function of time, Gareth.
How are you, Alan?
I'm good, thank you. Good. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you too.
Yeah.
Now, I was joking earlier about how when that first Spur started, it was like the Paleolithic era. But, but I mean, there weren't family restaurants at that time.
There were a few. Yeah, a couple of them up in Gauteng.
Because people didn't really like their children, for starters, and they certainly didn't want to eat with them, right?
Yes. That's like Oscar Wilde said, you know, little kids must be obscene and not heard.
So you decided, bugger that, I'm going to change this, I'm going to turn it on its head.
Yeah.
And you just decided to invent one of the biggest brands in food in South Africa. I mean, you didn't know it at the time, obviously.
Well, I didn't decide to invent it. I did have a little bit of a blueprint. I put myself to university working in a steakhouse in Joburg.
Right.
I grew up in Joburg. And I just didn't enjoy working for other people who wouldn't let me.
Hang on. You mean your fees weren't free and you didn't throw rocks and stones at the police to get them to drop them even further?
No comment, Gareth.
No, you actually paid? You got a job to go to university? God forbid.
I had a bit of a discussion with my father and told him that I'd pay him back for my first year, because he was complaining that I wasn't studying hard enough, and I got a job, put myself through university, and then worked for other people before university and after, and just got frustrated and didn't enjoy the corporate environment and decided to open a steakhouse in Cape Town, which was insane, really. Took me 3.5 years before I got it open, because it took me 2 years to find premises, to find anybody who would take me on as a tenant. I was 23 years old, going on 18.
Yeah.
I got in my little mini, drove down to Cape Town, looked for premises, wrote letters to agents. One answered out of about 35 agents, mm-hmm. and didn't have any premises for me, but at least that was encouraging. And I kept going up and down until one day, it was just a question of luck and timing. An agent knew somebody had bought a property in Newlands that were going to build a shopping center, that were looking for a restaurant. I met the guy. Mm-hmm. He took me home to see his family. They liked me. And over a few months, the deal was done.
How many tables were in this first restaurant?
We seated about 140.
Wow, it's a lot of people.
Well, five of the tables were outside in the foyer there, in the outside dining area.
Uh-huh.
The veranda sort of outside area.
Now, running a steakhouse is not an easy thing to do. It's no. There are issues around timing and staff and the food, and everybody complains, and it's a very difficult business. You can't take your eye off the ball for a second, right?
Absolutely. Have you run a steakhouse?
No, hell no. I'm just guessing that's
no,
what
it's
like.
Incredibly there's so much detail.
Yeah.
There's so many factors that have to come together all the time. A lot of organization. And looking after people, as you say, isn't that easy. But in Newlands in Cape Town, the people were fantastic. They weren't terribly demanding, which mm-hmm. wasn't necessary, because we gave our very best at all times. But they weren't the sort of people who gave you a very hard time on principle. And you do get a lot of people like that around. You know, some people just enjoy moaning in restaurants, I suppose.
They do, and then they also want free meals.
Well, there are those people, because what we do...
Can you spot them from a mile away?
No, but, you know, what we do is, when people have any issue, we deal with it to look after them from then up till now. And on occasions, you'll not charge. And you'll find some people do come back and try that trick again. And then you learn and you say, look, sir, we had this issue with your steak a few weeks ago. I'm so sorry that we've got an issue with it now, really. Here's another steak. And I hope from now on we'll get it right.
Or else just go away. I mean, no, you see, this is why I couldn't run a steakhouse.
No, we'd never say that.
But what is it? What is the magic ingredient here while we're talking about food?
Yeah.
That makes Spur such a popular brand and that makes it such a big deal across the country? Because there really isn't anybody who hasn't been to Spur in South Africa.
Yeah.
It's part of our national tapestry. You know,
yeah.
What is it that makes it so special?
Well, Gareth, it's great to hear you say that. I take it as a big compliment, and it fills me with a lot of pride, and thank you for that.
Yeah.
But I think what it is passion. I just needed to prove myself as a human being. I was this kid who wasn't getting anywhere. All my friends were already accountants and lawyers and God knows what, and getting married, which not a good idea at that early age. Or possibly at any age.
You reckon? Is this some advice?
No.
This is some wise advice from Alan.
But occasionally, you know, things are... partnerships of any sort can have their issues.
Sure.
But getting away from that, because I don't really mean that. That's the stereotypical joke.
I'll take the advice from whence it comes. Don't ever apologize, right?
Right. So passion, well, in my business, you have to apologize. I must say, you've got to eat humble pie, and you've got to be really keen to look after your customer at all times. You put them first. You don't put yourself first.
That's probably what makes it different.
And the passion for the business.
Yeah.
And the passion to serve people swiftly, to give them what they want, to enjoy the fact that they're enjoying their time. There's also that moving decor of all the kids and the people and the entertainment industry part of being in a steakhouse.
Yeah.
And particularly in the earlier days. I mean, look, it's 49 years later. Next week, Tuesday. No, Monday.
Wow.
Is the 24th of October.
49 years.
It's 24th of October.
So, well, happy anniversary. We are 40.
Thank you very much.
What are you going to do for the 50?
We're planning to do quite a big thing, looking after people in South Africa, less privileged people. We're working on something at the moment, but that's very much under the radar because we've only had one meeting with a group of people that we work with, and that was last week.
Wow.
But that's what we're looking to do, to give back to,
I mean,
to
Alan,
thank South Africa.
There are big financial institutions that don't last for half the time that this chain has lasted. And for, you know, restaurants come and go. You've seen
it. Yeah.
There's some of them that stick around for a little bit, but very seldom do they last more than 10, 20 years. You're here talking about 50 years. It's unbelievable.
Yes, and the two first restaurants, the four first restaurants, and 28, 94 of them, they're still going.
How many are there now? There's 250 local Spur restaurants.
288.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, whilst you turned your back, we opened a few more.
Didn't you also start John Dory?
No, we bought John Dory's, but we bought into John Dory's.
Oh, okay.
The founder was a guy in Durban, but we started Panarottis Pizza Pasta.
Wow.
Because I thought, you know, people are going out, they're having burgers and steaks, and then they want pizza and they want pasta. So we started Panarottis, and that took a little bit longer to get off the floor.
Yeah.
But we've got a great MD who's been running it now for a number of years, and he's doing a superb job with it. And we bring in Italian pasta and Italian pizza flour. And that is so good for you, that pizza flour, compared to the local stuff.
Are you big on health?
Yeah, I am.
Because, I mean, we'll talk about the yoga in a second.
Yes.
But it seems to me like you keep yourself in good shape.
Huh? Try to, sure. Yeah.
And I suppose eating is part of that, right?
Eating is part of life.
Well, no, but I mean, what you eat is going to determine whether or not you're healthy or not.
Absolutely. What you consume.
Right.
It's not just eating.
So what else, what would you say are the no-goes? Where do you not?
Look, I think a lot of it depends, as I find with my body, which is my own science experiment. A lot of it depends on what sort of blood type you are. I think that book on, you know, eating for your blood type has a lot of validity.
What's your blood type?
I don't know, but I know that I can't remember. I don't want to lie to you.
You believe sound in the thing, but you have no idea what your own blood type is.
No, I have an idea. I have an idea, but I've forgotten. I'm not too sure if it's A plus or AB positive.
Oh, so it's one of the A.
Yeah, and I need to eat meat. Thank goodness, because I love it.
Now, what do you think of
these? I'm a carnivore.
What do you think of these vegans?
I've been a vegan for a while.
And?
9 months. After 9 months, I could barely stand up, truly.
Sure.
Because I wasn't getting the minerals from various foods, namely meat and other foods that I needed to keep me going. So I stopped.
Right.
I've been a macrobioticist, It's a funny thing. This was 35 years ago, mm-hmm. after having been in the steakhouse business for quite a time and eating steak three times a day.
Sure.
And loving it.
Right.
I just decided, you know what, I've got to maybe look into this vegetarian thing that was a big rage in the States, and all the people who were in the know, in inverted commas, were doing it. So I thought I'd try it. Didn't really work for me at all, but I gave it a go.
Okay, so, you know, it works for some people, it doesn't work for others.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't know that I could ever give up meat either.
No.
My sister's a vegetarian. Ben here is trying his hand at that stuff. He doesn't eat much red meat.
He's not
anymore.
Looking as good as he used to, I can tell you that.
No, I'm not, because I just hurt my shoulder. I stopped exercising. No, like, I eat everything except for red meat. That's just the one thing.
Oh, so you eat chicken and fish?
Yeah. I just found that red meat was making me quite lethargic, and I just didn't need it.
Okay.
I wasn't craving it, so it was no big deal.
You're listening to your body.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's
about.
No, but
like, exactly to your point, you try these different things, and you eventually work it out, and it's not too hard.
And we've all got to remember, we've got different DNA. Some people need different stuff to make their bodies work at a you know, good
optimum
pace,
level.
Optimum level.
Yeah.
Other people have different stuff. I know people who can eat absolutely horrible, you know, chocolates and sweets and ice cream all day long.
And doesn't faze them.
Doesn't get in their way. And then they're healthy and they're happy and they look good. It doesn't last forever, obviously.
Yeah, but you know way too many 14-year-old girls.
Oh, please. It sounds disgusting. What's wrong with you? Now, what about the yoga? Tell me about that.
Well, you know, when you're in business and when you're I haven't got brothers and sisters. So the guys who worked with me in the business, my first partnership with a guy was a really bad experience. He turned out to be quite a lazy guy. And I'd gone in as a very naive, really naive person. So I allowed him, even though he came in really close to the beginning of the opening of the business after I'd done 3 years setting it up, I allowed him to come in, even though he didn't have as much money as I hoped he'd have, to be 50-50. So he then got a director's complex, bought himself a little MG, ran after the girls. We used to make all the juices and sauces fresh to our own recipes. And I'd phone him up and say, come over, we got to make sauces this afternoon. One afternoon, he didn't pitch up. And the second store, which he was running, was diving into the ground. And I was running the first store, Golden Spur in Newlands, and making a lot of money for both of us. And when he didn't pitch up, it just felt being like I was being completely stabbed in the back, betrayed and let down. So I made up my mind to get rid of him, which cost me a lot of money and nerves. Now, when you're dealing with people, what was the question?
No. I'm interested in this. Let's just go on to this for a second.
Yeah.
The thing I wanted to talk about is the yoga. But this guy, is it hard to make that decision? Because that's like a divorce.
Oh, it was like a divorce.
And you realize that the woman you're divorcing is going to take away half your stuff.
Yeah.
And in this case,
he took away more than that in this case, because his family that he was taking out the girl of and ended up marrying before he left us had a really top-notch lawyer as a relative. And it was very, very nasty and very, very expensive.
So did you have to start all over again?
No.
Again?
No, I retained the business and it was making good money, and I made it bigger. I did something he probably hadn't thought of. I made it bigger so I could now do more volume and make more money. And by then I'd settled down and I understood how to run it, although putting in another 6 tables inside was actually quite a big ask. I hadn't realized how big an ask it was, but within a week or so, when it got its
settle in.
Yeah, because we ran queues all the time. So we were running a machine. It was like being an air traffic controller.
Wow.
You know, it really was
quite
something.
Isn't it nice,
though,
that your place is so popular, you got queues outside?
Oh, it was phenomenal. But the work was very demanding. And
what kind of hours were you doing then?
I was doing like from 7 o'clock in the morning I'd get up till 2 o'clock in the morning I'd hit the sack if I was lucky. If I wasn't driving the staff home because we couldn't afford a combi. If somebody else was doing it that night, I might get home by 12 and then up again.
You were lucky, right, to get home at 12.
Yeah, and on a Saturday night it was later. And we were that popular, you know, people would come after the grill had just been switched off into the courtyard, and I'd see them come and I'd go out and say, hi guys, look, the grill's off. No, we want steaks. Okay, switch it on, take 10 minutes, heat it up. Because you were doing it for the customers. It was never the money. Yeah. It was just to build this machine and prove you could do it. In winter, we had queues again, of course, and we had a guy at the back of the queue giving out little glasses of sherry to keep people there. And then if people had finished their sherry and hadn't seen too much progress in the queue, they'd go across the road, get into their car. It was raining Cape Town winter. Yeah. I'd run across the road, knock on the car window and say to him, I didn't do this often, but it happened. Look, by the time you get somewhere else, walk through the rain, catch pneumonia, get your food. You'd have been in bed with me because I'll serve you quickly. You know, I just wanted people to get the experience. I just was that passionate and that nuts, manic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, you'd
because
have to
this
be
was my
totally
big chance in life.
By it, right?
Yeah, this yeah. was my big chance in life. And right, from there we grew.
So tell me how the yoga happened.
Well, this partner.
Yeah, the one who
junior,
screwed you over.
No, not him. And now another junior partner okay. who was really a fantastic guy. But he also felt a bit thwarted and he opened a business with another fellow behind my back, an ice cream parlor. It didn't compete, but it was just that he hadn't come and said, Alan, look, I want to do this, man.
Yeah. You would have
it's
been fine with it, but he didn't tell
you. I might have said, look, I'm worried about you splitting your energies and your focus, but I don't know what I would have said, but he did it behind my back. That's the fact of the matter. And I was sitting at, I was now using the Seapoint branch horseshoe booth with three jacks for three phones. We were all sitting there.
Yeah.
The first area manager, the second area manager and myself working out of this horseshoe booth. And I was sitting there and the other guys hadn't come in yet and I was feeling just awful. And I'd started doing yoga a bit. I had a mate who'd got me into yoga because I'd had a pain in my back. He said, do this. The pain went. I was starting to get sciatica. He said, sit like this and twist like this. Adho Mutsi Endrasana, not that it means much to many people. And the pain went.
Yeah.
And so I started doing yoga because I realized this is good for you. You know, right. connected with the intelligence of my body. And I was feeling so bad, I went to the morning yoga class of my teacher, and I became a morning lady rather than an evening lady because there were very few men there.
Yeah.
You know, right. and they were so all ladies.
It was just you and a bunch of girls, right?
Yeah, so I was this sort of nutcase as far as everybody's concerned who did yoga because people are scared of yoga. They're scared of the unknown, and they shouldn't be scared of yoga because yoga is the best exercise for the human body, and I really suggest for your well-being that both of you here and anybody listening to
we should
to
start them, now.
Really, before you, as you get older, you tighten up.
Yep.
And, you know, there's this analogy of old people tottering along being bent and balanced.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you must be, what, in your 70s?
I am.
You look pretty damn good.
Thanks, doll.
So this is the yoga, huh?
Yeah, it's the yoga. And the diligence of going every day. You know, you don't always want to be there. But when I get out of bed, I go to yoga. First thing, before I go to work.
Would you, if you could go back now, would you do anything over again in a different way?
Yeah, I'd become a rock singer.
Yeah, that would. You look like a rock singer.
Well, thank you.
What would you have done? Like, are we talking 80s glam rock? Are we talking...
No, earlier.
Rolling Stones?
Yeah,
60s?
That sort of stuff. That's when I was singing...
Mick Jagger, dancing around on stage.
Yeah, I was singing for a band a little bit when I was at university at the,
Idols, I'm an Idols judge. You want to sing for me?
I don't think right now.
No? Okay, well, you warm up a bit later
on. Thanks very much for the opportunity. you've caught me cold.
Oh, man. How hard is it to manage other people when they're not as passionate as you are about the business? I mean, you have to employ people, right?
Very good question.
How do you get them enthusiastic about something when you're the one with the vision?
Well, Gareth, as I said to you, I was very naive when I started. I really was. And the staff issue down in Cape Town was very different to Joburg, where I had sort of lived all my life, where people came on time. They knew their jobs. They took pride. Cape Town, it was a lot sloppier, especially in the catering industry, because of the wine. No, the guys were imbibing too much wine.
There's no urgency in Cape Town.
Well, that's not true.
Is there urgency
I'll
there?
Defend Cape Town to the
really?
Death. Yeah. No, we've got a lot of really slick operators in Cape Town. And it's become a huge world city in the last few years. You can't believe what happens.
Yeah, they've upped the game.
In
fact,
and I'm not proud of this and I hate it, the traffic in Cape Town's now supposed to be as bad, if not worse, than Joburg. That's also a function of roads not being prepared. But let's not go there. Let's go back to the question you asked. You know, employing people. So I was this naive young guy. And then one day I saw the guy Patty, who's a cleaner, standing on a high ladder, doing the windows above the double doors, eyes closed, swaying from side to side. He was about to fall down, crack his head on the concrete. I said, Patty, come down here. He was a drinker.
Oh, yeah.
So, and a lot of the guys were, unfortunately. Yeah. So I fired him on the spot, and that's when I changed, Jekyll to Hyde. I realized that if I was too laissez-faire, taking other people's interpretation of how the business should run too seriously, I was going to go down the tubes. And I then became completely manic in how I directed stuff, and things had to be done my way or the highway. And that's what made it successful, because my vision was sound.
And then people have to marry into that, or else they don't fit in.
They either buy in or they go. You know, sometimes, to tell you a story against myself, we'd be running on a very busy night, and we very often had young trainees who were given three or four tables, or two tables depending on their capability. And one, I'd look around and the trainee'd be gone, and their order book and their pen would be on the fridge because they'd just gone home. They couldn't
handle the pressure.
They couldn't handle the pressure. They couldn't handle me saying, do this, and don't do that before this. And have you asked them if they want salads with their steak and mushrooms with their steak and sauces with their steak? No? Okay, go back and ask them. They didn't like that, you see, because I was training on the floor 24 hours a day.
How much do you still have to do with the day-to-day stuff?
Well, I'm very lucky, Gareth. I've been able to be promoted to my area of competence at last. And what I do now is I interact with the ad agencies, and we've only got two ad agencies on four brands. I am the guy who decides when we give them a brief. I've got a guy, Sasha Duplessis, who runs our marketing department. We've just got 42 people in it today. Right. We've got DTP operators. We've got a lot of franchisees in six brands all over the place, thank goodness, and they're wonderful, and we need them to be top-notch. Right. And Sasha handles a big department. And he and I, Sasha gives the briefs after discussions with myself and our CEO, Pierre Fontanda, about what we need to target in our TV advertising, radio advertising, gives that to the ad agency. They come back with scripts. Uh-huh. I'm the guy who says, no, that's wrong strategically because of this and this, or this isn't funny enough, please go away, come back with something better.
You've got the feel for things.
I understand the industry and I understand my brands.
Is it harder now than it's ever been because there's so much information?
It's always exhilarating. I love it. I find it absolutely fantastic. You know, when we're doing the sound in a TV in a sound studio, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes the guys who are doing it and the creative director of the agency is working with them, they can't quite get it. I'll pitch in because I did a little bit of acting when I was younger.
Singing, maybe?
I did a bit of singing, but I actually was in a rock musical in Cape Town at the New Space Theatre.
And how well does that received? With your queues around the building
No. But it was full. It was full. It ran for 2 weeks. It was wonderful. Wonderful. I don't know if you ever knew an actor, Charles Common, up here. He used to hang around Rumours in Rocky Street. He moved from Cape Town. He was a great actor, and he was in it. Billy Flynn, did you know Billy Flynn?
Well, Bill Flynn, who doesn't know?
Yeah, I acted with him, but as a junior.
Right.
He was the maestro. But, yeah, I acted a little bit. And so when the radio ads are being produced or the sound, I'll sometimes give them the intonation or the accent. I'm reasonably good at accents. And I'll write copy. I'll change scripts. And we'll discuss it. And the ad agent will say, Alan, you mad? That's no good. And I'll back down.
Trump or Hillary?
Neither.
No,
you know,
terrible
to
people.
Me, politicians, unfortunately, there are exceptions, Helen Ziller, etc. They thugs in suits, man.
Yeah.
You know, I can't back either of them, but America doesn't need Trump because he's a lunatic.
Yeah.
And he's dangerous.
Right.
And he's too impulsive and doesn't consider. So for me.
Do you think he's a nice businessman? Or do you think that's also
no, nonsense? I don't think he's a nice man on any
at
level.
All. Right.
I think he's an asshole, man.
Right.
You know, putting it quite bluntly, he's not my type of man, never will be.
Have you ever had these political types walk into your restaurants and sit down? You ever had to deal with presidents?
Well, no, not presidents. I think, you know, they're too important to eat with us. But we've had some, you know what? I must back off on that statement. We've had the late, great saint in my eyes, Nelson Mandela, in one of our restaurants.
Right. I've got a photo. He wasn't pretentious.
He was a marvelous human being on every level. I mean, he was a saint, in my opinion.
Sure.
I mean, a man who was treated like he was treated.
But no Jacob Zuma coming to eat there with his 25 kids? I mean, it would be perfect.
But hey, you'd have to pay, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nothing on the house.
No.
And Mandela on the house.
Especially when we have that many kids. Difficult customers, I
Be reckon. Fruitful and multiply.
Yeah, especially when you've got four or five wives.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alan, listen, pleasure to meet you.
And you too.
And thank you for everything that you've done for, you know, the whole taste of South Africa, really.
Gareth, thank you, but it wasn't me. It was me and a hell of a lot of people. I've had a lot of help.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
It's true.
If you didn't have the vision, none of this would have happened.
Maybe it would have been somebody else, but thanks for saying all that.
It would have been called something else. The stakes would have been cuck. It would have been very average.
Thanks, man.
Give yourself some credit. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much. There we go. There's an interesting guy to talk to. Alan Amber. Very nice to meet you. And if you're ever in Cape Town at the Sea Point, can people come to your yoga classes? Can they just pitch up?
I'm at the Virgin Gym on the Common.
Right.
And but you've got to be Virgin members. It's Iyengar yoga, by the way. I must add that. It's important.
What's that all about?
Guruji Iyengar, who's been dead 2 years, died at 95. He was still doing 5 hours of yoga a day. He took yoga from 2,000 years ago via his uncle, who taught him when he was a sickly kid, and he became a very healthy, strong bull of a man. And he added to it and refined it. And so Iyengar yoga is the path. Unfortunately, there are a lot of charlatans who pretend they can teach yoga who have no qualification. If you want to become an Iyengar teacher, you've got to do a 3-year course after having done yoga for no less than 5 years initially.
I'm going to take your advice and start this.
Please do.
All right. Thanks, man. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you. Pleasure
to meet you. There we go. Alan Amber. What a guy. CliffCentral.com